Good evening. You're listening to KRCB FM Santa Rosa, community powered radio at 91.1 and 90.9 FM. We're also streaming on the web at krcb.org. Comcast cable customers can also hear us on channel 961. It's 8 p.m. and time for Outbeat Radio.
Outbeat goes on. Outbeat's along. Drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain. La-di-da-di-dee. La-di-da-di. Disco was once the rage of
And welcome to KRCB FM Santa Rosa. This is Outbeat Radio. We are community-powered radio for the LGBT community, made for, by, and about LGBTs.
Yes, we are indeed. We've got a great program for you this evening, and we're going to get started very, very shortly, and we thank you for listening.
Excellent. Well, we're going to start out with the news from Joel Bellagio. Here's Outbeat Radio News.
This is Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio. In international news, according to an article that appeared in the agency France Presse, the gay couple jailed on charges of gross indecency for holding Malawi's first unofficial same-sex wedding will be sentenced next month. It is reported that the court will meet on March 22nd for judgment, this according to a magistrate of the court. The couple were denied bail when they were brought before the court last month. They face a maximum sentence of 14 years imprisonment in the deeply conservative Southern African country, which forbids homosexuality. Meanwhile, in the United States, Massachusetts Attorney General Martha Coakley has stated that a federal law that defines marriage as a union between a man and a woman interferes with her state's right to regulate the institution. Coakley's office has filed a suit in July challenging the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. In papers filed recently, Coakley has asked a judge to deem the law unconstitutional without holding a trial on the lawsuit. Coakley argues that regulating marital status has traditionally been left to the states. She also says the federal law treats married heterosexual couples and married same-sex couples differently on Medicaid benefits and burial in veterans' cemeteries. Massachusetts was the first state to legalize gay marriage and is the first to challenge the law. And on the same-sex marriage front, with Washington, D.C. poised to begin accepting marriage applications from same-sex couples on March 3rd, the Attorney General of the state of Maryland has indicated that Maryland could recognize same-sex marriages that take place in other states. The Maryland legislature would have to weigh in on the subject before that could happen. And closer to home, less than a year after dethroned Miss California USA Carrie Prejean stirred up controversy with her remarks against gay marriage, a similar war of words is brewing in Beverly Hills, this according to an article in 365gay.com. The Beverly Hills mayor is reported to have said that she is outraged over a Miss California USA contestant who is claiming to represent the city in the upcoming pageant and who spoke out against same-sex marriage in recent media interviews. The mayor said in a statement that 23-year-old Lauren Ashley does not live in Beverly Hills or represent the city in any capacity. The mayor said she was shocked to see statements made by a beauty pageant contestant under the name of Beverly Hills, a city which has a long history of tolerance and respect. Ashley recently told the Fox News and other media outlets that same-sex marriage goes against God and the Bible. A director for the Miss California USA pageant told the Los Angeles Times that pageant contestants choose the area they represent, and Ashley chose to compete as Miss Beverly Hills. The city of Beverly Hills has contacted the Miss California USA pageant officials to determine ways to formally prevent any beauty contestants from claiming the title of Miss Beverly Hills in the future. And right here in our own backyard, the wit, career, and irresistible appeal of legendary Hollywood star Mae West is remembered and explored in Dirty Blonde, an award-winning comedy playing Thursday through Sundays, February 26th through March 21st at Santa Rosa's 6th Street Playhouse. And you can also walk the red carpet Sunday, March 7th from 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. and enjoy the experience and the glamour of the 22nd Annual Napa Valley Academy Awards Viewing Extravaganza. Funds raised benefit the CARE Network's HIV programs at the Queen of the Valley Medical Center. The Robert Mondavi Winery is the setting. And Word is Out, Stories of Some of Our Lives, is the face-to-face film March 18th at 7:15 at the Rialto Cinemas in Santa Rosa. 30 years ago, Word is Out, Stories of Some of Our Lives startled audiences across the country when it appeared in movie theaters and on television. The feature-length documentary about lesbian and gay identity made by gay filmmakers, the film had a huge impact when it was released and became an icon of emerging gay rights movements of the 1970s. For more information on all of these events, go online to SonomaBoysNightOut.com. And there you have it. This has been Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio. And now, in recognition of Black History Month, we are honored to present a selection from a State of the Reunion program that was broadcast earlier this month here on KRCB.
This week for Black History Month, we're focusing on one man.
I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
Actually, it's not that man. While Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech is what most of us remember from the Civil Rights Movement, it might not have ever happened if it weren't for one man we probably have never heard of.
The problem can never be stated in terms of black and white.
Bayard Rustin, a black gay pacifist who changed the course of American history. It's February 1956, Montgomery, Alabama. A young preacher named Martin Luther King is leading a bus boycott after a black woman, Rosa Parks, refused to give up her seat on a city bus. At this point, you have to understand that Montgomery is one match away from an explosion. The racial tensions in the city are high, and no one knows how this will end. On this day, a dark car pulls up to Dr. King's house. Two African-American men get out of the car, walk up to the porch, nod to the armed guards by the door, and are escorted into King's sitting room.
And when we were ushered into Dr. King's living room, I said, "Watch out, Bill, there's a gun in that chair," because he was about to sit on the gun.
That is the voice of the most important civil rights leader that I'd never heard of, a Mr. Bayard Rustin. Now, Bayard is an activist from up north. He'd been applying the Gandhian principles of nonviolent protest to the civil rights cause long before anyone had ever heard of Martin Luther King. When the busboy got began, it was clear that this was the moment the civil rights struggle had been waiting for. But Bayard knew that fundamental changes had to be made in order for the boycott to be a success.
I think it is fair to say that Dr. King's view of nonviolent tactics was almost non-existent when the boycott began. In other words, at that point, Dr. King was permitting himself and his children at home to be protected by guns.
Which is understandable given the very real dangers King and his followers were facing. Bayard spoke to King passionately about his belief that the presence of guns compromised the boycott and could become a dangerous liability. His point was illustrated when late one night the armed guards posted at King's house almost shot a young boy delivering a telegram.
That incident brought Dr. King up against the implications of these guns. And we talked many, many hours about tactics of nonviolence. And I presume that Dr. King may have learned something from those discussions.
And the universe exhaled. When I first heard this story of Bayard schooling Martin Luther King on the practice of nonviolence, I imagine that my thoughts were similar to Dr. King's as he sat across from Bayard for the first time. You see, they were 2 months into the boycott. The participants had been beaten, arrested, and King's home had been bombed, and Mr. Rustin was telling him to get rid of the guns. No protection. I'm sure that Dr. King sat there, thought about his wife, his children, himself, and what Byard was asking him to do, and thought, who is this man?
He was the American Gandhi we had been looking for.
Byard Rustin was a fighter for racial justice and peace in the United States.
March 17, 1912, Westchester, Pennsylvania. Byard Rustin, born to a teenage mother, raised by his grandmother whose Quaker roots run deep. But his grandmother told him not to take nothing from nobody, yet all around him, injustice prevails. Who is this man that as a teenager fought segregation, one-man sit-ins, protesting, challenging, shaking up the status quo? Who is this man?
He was very innovative, very creative in his ideas.
But also he had a kind of strategic mind.
And he was an incredible organizer.
At an early age, knew he was different.
Because he lived his life very openly, and there was no snickering around that Byard is gay, you know, behind his back, because he was very straightforward in who he was.
Comfortable in his own skin at a time when his skin was a detriment. Comfortable with being gay when gayness was a crime. Comfortable with standing for what he believed when what he believed pushed against the grain.
People took a liking to him, or maybe they hated his guts in some cases.
Joins the pacifists, vows to create racial equality in a segregated land, vows to fight with words, to sharpen his intellect, thinks outside the box. But as the country fights the Second World War, the peaceful warrior refuses to pick up a gun.
Rustin declares himself a conscientious objector, which leads to a jail sentence in federal prison during World War II for 2.5 years.
Locked in a jail cell, far from the red oaks of Westchester, they tell him to just be quiet and serve your time.
Rustin, being the man that he is, doesn't just go to prison and decide, well, I'll sit here until they let me out, but he decides he's going to organize in the prison against racial segregation.
Who is this man?
Just before he was about to launch a strike, prison officials pull him aside and bring him up on charges of engaging in sexual activity with other inmates. And the remaining 2 years in prison were a torture for him.
Shh, quiet little bird, or we'll clip your wings. Don't fly too high, or we'll push you down. Don't dream of the sky, or we will wake you up. Now, when most of us think about the civil rights movement, we tend to think about Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X. But all of that begins to happen in the mid-1950s. But Byard, on the other hand, was doing his work in the 40s. A decade before the Montgomery bus boycott, Byard and others set out on what they called the Journey of Reconciliation. In 1944, Irene Morgan, a black woman, got on a bus going from Virginia to Maryland. She was arrested for sitting in the white section. Her case went all the way to the Supreme Court, where they ruled it was unconstitutional to demand segregation on interstate travel. That ruling presented an opportunity to fight racial injustice directly. The organization that Byard was working for, the Fellowship of Reconciliation, decided to send a mixed group of black and white men to travel together through the Upper South to test the enforcement of the ruling. Now, the late 40s is a heady time for Byard. After the Journey of Reconciliation, he begins to travel abroad, spending time in India working with Gandhi's successor, and he's sought after in Africa by several independence movements fighting colonization. Now, when he returns to the States, he tours the country giving performances that are part lecture, part concerts. See, Byard has an amazing gift as an orator, but he also has a beautiful voice.
Now, this is a work song, and very typical of the way in which all men raised their hammers together and they all fell together.
Take this hammer.
He would lecture on the evils of colonialism and midway through the speech sing a spiritual to illustrate his point.
Carry it to the captain.
Then one night in January 1953, on a speaking tour in Southern California, everything changes.
He goes out one evening after his work is over and meets two men and is in a parked car having sex.
Professor John D'Amelio has studied Byard's life for over 12 years and has written one of the defining biographies on Byard entitled Lost Prophet.
And he is discovered in downtown Pasadena by the Los Angeles County Police, and he's arrested on a public lewdness charge along with the two other men who were in the car. And it becomes this huge public scandal.
He looked desolate. He looked shattered.
Dave McReynolds was a young activist then who looked to Byard as a mentor.
And I went out to see Byard when he was in the county jail. He had a 60-day term. And he was completely shattered because this was not an arrest which was a moral principle of any kind at all.
Sitting in that jail cell in Pasadena, he must have felt like everything he'd worked for was slipping through his fingers. In the 50s, the stigma of being gay was a heavy burden to bear.
What Jimmy didn't know was that Ralph was sick, a sickness that was not visible like smallpox, but no less dangerous and contagious, a sickness of the mind. You see, Ralph was a homosexual, a person who...
Byard's arrest makes national news, and this may be the lowest point in his life. Humiliated, not wishing to bring shame on the Fellowship of Reconciliation, he resigns. Eventually, he joins another peace organization, the War Resisters League, where he works on issues he's passionate about. The difference being is that he's moved out of the spotlight and concentrates his efforts behind the scene. And then, in 1956, history comes calling.
Just the other day, one of the fine citizens of our community, Mrs. Rosa Parks, was arrested because she refused to give up her seat for a white passenger.
Which brings us back to that night in Montgomery when Byard first goes to see Dr. King.
This is, you know, one of the ways in which Byard Rustin affects the course of history in a significant way. Dr. King, of course, proves to be a man of enormous talents. And he was also a young man who did not have political organizing experience, and that's what Byard was able to provide. He was able to become Dr. King's tutor at a very early stage in King's career.
Byard gives the Montgomery boycott something it desperately needs, not just the expulsion of guns, but a righteous indignation, the feeling that they're on the right side of history. When the arrest warrants were issued for a number of the boycott's leaders, Byard tells him, put on your Sunday best, go as a group, turn yourself in, make it a celebration. Show them that you are not scared. Show them that you are on the side of justice. You see, the boycott tells blacks, not just in Montgomery, but across the nation, that they have power, that they can make change, that the future they dream of for their children is right around the corner, and they may not be able to take a bus to get there. They may have to walk, carpool, or take a taxi. It may take longer than they'd like, but they will get there.
And go on to my God and be free.
Byard knows that in order for the boycott to work, it has to spread beyond Montgomery. The protest catches the imagination of the nation, but now they had to cast their net wider.
And I had said to Dr. King that I don't think you can win in Montgomery unless these other places are better organized. So Dr. King said, what do you think we ought to do? And I said, I think there's only one thing to do, and that is to bring all these groups into a single organization.
That conversation is the beginning of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. With the help of several others, Byard and Dr. King gather some 60 ministers from across the South. Their goal is to create an organization that will coordinate and support nonviolent direct action to fight segregation. Byard serves as a liaison between King and several Northern civil rights leaders. His longstanding connections with prominent figures like A. Philip Randolph and A.J. Musty prove beneficial to the young organization. After a series of victories in the South, they begin to plan mass demonstrations at the Democratic and Republican conventions when Byard's past catches up with him. Historian John D'Amelio.
And at that point, the Reverend Adam Clayton Powell from New York City, representative in Congress from Harlem, doesn't like how public Rustin is becoming, doesn't like that civil rights forces are going to target his Democratic Party, doesn't like that he's not controlling what's happening in this political arena.
Powell, pressured by the Democratic Party and possibly his own ambitions, lets it be known to Dr. King that if he doesn't withdraw his support from the demonstrations, he'll release to the press that King and Byard are lovers.
It's a completely ridiculous thing. There isn't a shred of truth to it. But it leads King to panic, and Bayard realizes that King is not going to defend him and stand up to Powell, and so Rustin chooses to resign.
And it happens again. Bayard's sexuality follows him like a shadow, a readily available weapon for his opponents to neutralize him and his work. In what has become a pattern when these accusations surface, Bayard chooses to remove himself from the front line and quietly works in the background. Occasionally, he advises King from a distance, but he has no official role in the civil rights movement, until A. Philip Randolph, who had been a mentor to Bayard since the 40s, begins to engage him once again.
By the beginning of 1963, the civil rights movement was so in the headlines and was creating so much upheaval that Rustin and Randolph, and I don't think one can ever know who brought it up first, but Rustin and Randolph in a conversation together at the end of 1962 say, well, you know, in 1941 we talked about having a march on Washington and we never did it. Maybe now is the time.
Now, the leaders of all the major civil rights organizations all know that Bayard is the man to organize the march, but they're scared that his sexuality could become an issue. A. Philip Randolph, the elder statesman of civil rights, well respected by all parties, declares that he will be the organizer and he'll appoint his staff as he sees fit. And Bayard would be his right hand.
Bayard was named the deputy director, some Mickey Mouse title, but everybody knew that it was Bayard who was really organizing and making this thing happen. And Bayard was determined that not only would the march be peaceful, but it would go beyond that, that it would police itself, and that it would be absolutely nonviolent.
The major thing we decided was that we would have only black police inside the march policing, and only white police on the fringes where the Ku Klux Klan and other bigots were coming in. So that you reduce the possibility of violence by having whites arresting whites who misbehave and blacks arresting blacks who misbehave.
So virtually every day during the planning of the march, groups of 30 policemen and firemen would come up to march headquarters, and Bayard would take them into a back alley, so to speak, and show them how to nonviolently move people in a crowd. And you sort of do that by linking arms and pushing gently, and really trained them in nonviolence. He believed that if things are well organized, people will naturally be well behaved.
But for all the meticulous planning Bayard is doing, there are some things he has no control over.
Bayard had been very frightened or worried that the gay issue would come up before the march. And Strom Thurmond took the floor of the Senate maybe 3 or 4 weeks before the date of the march.
Strom Thurmond, senator from South Carolina and bitter enemy of desegregation, stands on the Senate floor and rails against Bayard and the march. He calls Bayard a draft dodger, a communist, a homosexual, and includes details of his arrest. Panic spreads through the march's office. I mean, Bayard must feel like it's happening all over again. At the dawn of what could be his greatest accomplishment, a mistake from 10 years ago could take it all away. But A. Philip Randolph would not be coward.
Randolph calls a press conference because they have to deal with it. And Randolph, who was nothing if not extremely dignified, said,
How dare a segregationist like Strom Thurmond condemn someone for immorality? We stand by Bayard Rustin. He is our organizer. He is Mr. March on Washington. And it's that moment, really, that is the end of using the gay charge against Rustin effectively.
The gay issue had been taken away, by ironically, by Strom Thurmond.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Well, the day of the march was incredible. I think probably by 3 and 4 in the morning, we were all awake. We were on the mall. And Bayard had his pad and was doing everything. He was making sure
that the sound system is working.
Three,
the mall is dead.
I'll tell you, I don't think I've ever been so nervous at the beginning. The one thing I remember above all others is the press was around us and they said, Mr. Rustin, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. You said there were going to be 250,000 people here. We don't see 5,000 people yet. Where are they all? I took a blank piece of paper out of my pocket and looked at it. I pulled my watch out and I looked at it and I said, gentlemen, everything is going according to schedule.
And I am standing next to him. And I said to him, Bard, what are you talking about? He said, I don't know, I just made it up. And sure enough, at a given time, people began to come off the trains and the buses arrived.
What about that trademark?
Do you want to be free?
Yeah!
Do you want to be free?
Yeah!
Around 9 o'clock in the morning, from every direction that you looked, you could see these people coming in cars, buses, on foot. It was absolutely exhilarating. It was mostly exhilarating because the crowd was about 50-50 black and white.
And the place filled up so rapidly. I saw people marching, you know, from, I guess, the train station or wherever the buses were, marching, I don't know, 100 deep or whatever, you know, but each group, they were marching under banners.
And ask you to assemble in your respective groups and begin the march for freedom now. Let's begin.
I pledge my heart and my mind and my body to the achievement of social peace.
We must say that we cannot be patient. We do not want our freedom gradually, but we want to be free now.
Slow down.
We are tired.
We will not stop our militant, peaceful demonstrations. We will not come off of the streets.
One day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today.
In his hands, he's got you and me.
And now, Bayard Rustin, Deputy Director of the March, will read the demand.
At the end of the rally at the Lincoln Memorial, Rustin gets his moment in the sun when he leads the crowd in a recitation of what the 10 demands of the March on Washington were.
The first demand is that we have effective civil rights legislation.
And he reads each of them into the microphone standing on the podium and hears back the shout from all of the people who are assembled there on the mall.
What do you say? We demand that segregation be ended in every school district in the year 1963.
And it's really you know, at this point, he knows the march has been as successful as it can possibly be, and he had a lot to do with it.
Some people said, well, it was more like a picnic than a protest. Well, when 250,000 people can come to speak to their government, and it is more like a picnic than a protest, that is a salute to everyone who attended and to the response which our government gave. I believe the March on Washington said to the American people, we are now capable of having that kind of love and affection and absence of bigotry, which means we can become one nation.
No more misery, no more misery, no more misery over me. And before I'll be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free.
You're listening to Outbeat Radio on KRCB FM Santa Rosa. We'll be back right after the music break.
get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove. Get a fast car. I got a plan to get us out of here. Been working at the convenience store. Managed to save just a little bit of money. Won't have to drive too far. Just cross the border and into the city. You and I can both get jobs. Finally see what it means to be living. See, my old man's got a problem. Yeah, but the bottle, that's the way it is. He says his body's too old for working. His body's too young to look like his. My mama went off and left him. She wanted more from life than he could give. I said, somebody's got to take care of him. So I quit school and that's what I did. You got a fast car. Is it fast enough so we can fly away? We gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way.
Support for Outbeat Radio and KRCB-FM comes from members and from Advanced Fertility Associates Medical Group, providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care. Serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. On the web at afamd.com. And from PFLAG, the North Bay chapter of Parents, Family and Friends of Lesbians, Gays, Transgender, and Intersex Persons. The Santa Rosa Support Group meets at 7:30 p.m. on the fourth Monday of the month at 312 Chin Street. Information about support group meetings in Napa, Marin, or Mendocino counties is available at 1-866-350-2462 or on the web at pflag-nb.org.
Buy a bigger house and live in the suburbs. So I remember when we were driving in your car. Speed so fast, it felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone. Someone, be someone. You got a fast car. I got a job that pays all our bills. You sell drinking late at the bar. See more your friends than you do your kids. I'd always hope for better. Thought maybe together you and me find it. I got no plans, I ain't going nowhere. So take your fast car and keep on driving. I remember when we were driving in your car. Speed so fast, it felt like I was drunk. City lights stay out before us. Your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. You got a fast car. Is it fast enough so you can fly away? You gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way.
Welcome back. You are listening to Fast Car by Tracy Chapman. And if you're just joining us, this is Outbeat Now. Next up, it's this month's edition of Outbeat Youth.
Welcome to this edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a program for and about queer youth in the North Bay Area. While this show is live on the air, you can chat with us online at www.outbeatyouth.com. Just click on the chat button at the top of the page and enter in a username of your choice. I also invite you to join us on Facebook and MySpace. And remember, you can always listen to and download previous shows on iTunes. Links for all of these connections are available on the website at outbeatyouth.com. We're going to begin this month with our youth profile, talking with someone we hope will become a regular correspondent for Outbeat Youth, bringing us the latest information from the movie theater. Junior Vega is an avid movie buff and is here to share with us a little more about himself. Junior, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thank you, Greg.
So tell us a little bit about where you grew up.
Oh, well, I grew up in Santa Rosa. I was born here. I lived here all my life.
Okay, so you're a hometown boy.
Yes.
So let's go back to high school. Tell us a little bit about where you went to high school and what that was like for you.
Yeah, I went to high school, LCL in freshman year, and then I went to Pioneer sophomore year, and then after that, I homeschooled myself.
Okay, so you moved around a little bit through your high school years.
I did.
And I understand you came out in high school. Tell us a little bit about that.
It was very scary. I told maybe two or three people who I trusted, and I think I told the wrong person, and the word got out little by little. You know, I got a lot of, you know, bad names called at me. I've had been in and out of the principal's office many times, whether I provoked it or they provoked it, because just of one slur. But
so what year in high school were you when this happened?
Freshman year. Ninth
freshman
grade.
Year. Yeah. And what, you know, what prompted you to come out? Did someone out you, or did you decide that it was time for you?
It was a lot of things, but I think one time that really did it for me, that's when I, let's see, that was 5 years ago. So my sisters came over for the holidays, and we were having dinner, and they were all with their husbands and kids, and I was thinking to myself, like, wow, I'm never going to have that, because I knew what I was, and I didn't think that was possible.
Right.
Yeah.
And I imagine for a lot of young people, there's that same feeling. So you and I met when you were participating with Positive Images. How did that come about for you?
One of my friends, it's a funny story, one of my friends got in trouble with the law and had to do community service hours. So Positive Images was one of his choices. And once I went with him to check it out, and I was just amazed that a place like this existed. Yeah, and then I met one of the co-directors, Jim Foster, and I just wanted to get involved right away. I thought it was amazing. Yeah.
And you also did a period of time there as the intern as well, didn't you?
Yes, after 2-3 months involved with Positive Images, Jim Foster was looking for an intern, and he asked me and got the board's permission, and bam, I was an intern for 6 months.
So yeah. How did that help you getting through your high school years and sort of continuing your coming out process?
It helped me so much. I was very ignorant on a lot of levels. For example, like the whole trans issue, I thought transvestite, transsexual, they all meant the same thing, but they all are different meanings. I've been on over a dozen panels, whether it's through a high school or colleges, just telling my story and hearing the other youth tell their story, and just, you know, it's really heavy. It's just amazing what people do and go through for this stuff.
So, do you have a boyfriend?
I do, yes.
So tell us a little bit about him.
His name is Patrick. He's 23. He lives in Petaluma, and he's a hairdresser. He's amazing.
Very good. How'd you guys meet?
We met at Whole Foods.
At Whole Foods?
Yeah, funny story.
Produce aisle, meat department.
It was a drink section. I was looking for a drink, and I grabbed, I forgot what drink it was, and he's like, oh, I like that drink. And he's just like, I'm like, huh? And then we started talking, and he asked me for my number, and we went out.
Very good. How long have you guys been seeing each other?
I think it's been about 7-8 weeks.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. So what do you like to do for fun?
I'm a big movie junkie, so I love to watch movies. I try to stay active. I like to play tennis.
So what makes a good movie?
I think a movie for me, something that could grab you, whether it can make me laugh out loud, cry my eyes out, something that could get me thinking about outside the box, a drama, for example.
Have you watched a lot of gay-themed movies?
Yes, I have.
And so as you think back and look at sort of the history, your experience with the history of gay film, what have you seen changed? Or even just in thinking about mainstream movies with gay characters, what's changed?
You know, when I think about mainstream movies, I don't think much has changed. But when I think about independent films, I think it come a long way. So yeah, like Hollywood blockbusters, I don't really see much of it, but independent movies I think are really doing good. Yeah.
So what's your favorite gay theme movie?
I love a good romance movie. One of my favorite movies of all time is The Shelter. It's a gay film and it's just amazing. It's coming out story. Go get it. Go watch it. It's amazing.
Did you see Milk?
I did see Milk, yes.
And what did you think about Sean Penn?
Sean Penn really nailed that. I'm glad he won his Oscar for that movie. He blew me away. He really nails a good Harvey Milk. And the cast was incredible. You got Emile Hirsch in it. You got Diego Luna. You got James Franco. It was incredible.
Well, Junior, we're going to look forward to hearing a lot more from you each month with some movie recommendations. And I'd like to thank you very much for joining us on Outbeat Youth.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you very much.
And we'll be back right after this. Many teens question their sexuality. You can find safe and reliable information online provided by the Matthew Shepard Foundation at www.matthewsplace.com. Matthew's Place has information about how to come out, health and wellness, and much more. Learn more anytime online by going to www.matthewsplace.com. And we're back, and with us tonight is Casey Halcrow from the Spectrum LGBT Resource Center in Marin. You know, Casey, we're so fortunate in the North Bay to have a couple of really great organizations to support the LGBT community, and particularly youth. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about how Spectrum got started and what's the mission of the organization?
Well, Spectrum actually got started as the Ministry of Light. That was the founding name of the organization. And it was started by a Presbyterian reverend named Janie Spar. And the Ministry of Light was born, I guess, out of a very clear need for community, for LGBT folks, especially safe community. Not too long after it was founded, it was founded in 1982. Of course, we were hit in the United States with the AIDS crisis. Well, the Ministry of Light quickly became a place for gay men to be honest about both their sexuality and their spirituality. And a lot of people had trouble when they found out that they had AIDS. If they did have any religious background, they thought because of their sexuality, there would be repercussions of that. And so Spectrum really became a place that people could talk about their spirituality in a safe way and come to terms with everything that was going on in their lives. And, you know, really right from the beginning, Spectrum worked with some of the most vulnerable populations. And as most people know, the youth population is a very vulnerable population. Right. So pretty quickly we started youth programs and have been doing them ever since. The mission of Spectrum as an organization provides community leadership to promote acceptance, understanding, and full inclusion for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people.
And so the organization has obviously grown over the years. It serves a lot of different populations. And I understand you just opened a brand new center. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, we do have a brand new space. And I actually am really excited about it. Spectrum was housed in the same location for 22 years. So it's just been since the beginning of October that we moved to the new space. We were in San Anselmo, which I think that when Spectrum was first founded, when Spectrum first moved to San Anselmo, it made a lot of sense because of the time. We wanted to be kind of off the beaten path and not so that everybody could find us, but that the people that needed to be able to find us could. And thankfully, that's not so much the case anymore in 2010. Now we're in San Rafael. We're right by the Civic Center. It's a lot more centrally located. It's a lot easier for folks to get to us if they do or don't have a car. And that wasn't the case in San Anselmo. Of course, I have a bias because I'm the youth programs coordinator, and not all youth have access to vehicles. So it's easier for them to get to us, too. Also, the building that we're in is the Justice Center, which, how cool that an LGBT organization can be housed in a justice center. And it just speaks to the social justice that we do try to do as an organization. And there are a lot of other nonprofits in the same building as us. So it's made it easier on some levels to be able to collaborate with other nonprofit organizations and not just have LGBT be the gay thing and housed at the gay organization, but really be able to get our fingers in other organizations and promote some more acceptance throughout Marin County, throughout other nonprofit organizations.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations on that.
Thanks.
Huge accomplishment. And tell me a little bit more about the other groups that you serve. This isn't just a youth organization.
No.
It serves other populations as well.
We serve everybody. We have groups for the youth. We have groups for the senior population. Right now, those are generally considered the two most vulnerable populations. We have discussion groups for men. We have discussion groups for women. We've had coming out groups for women. There are different social groups that aren't necessarily sponsored by Spectrum, but we make sure to have all of their information on our events calendar so that when folks come to our website, they know where to find what's going on in Marin County. We also have a counseling program that's newer to our organization, a few years old now. We have a woman on staff named Kristen Brew who does one-on-one counseling with LGBT folks. And I think that that's been a huge success for our organization. I think that a lot of people are looking for LGBT therapists, and it's not always easy to find them. We have the Speakers Bureau, which is the program that that kind of goes out into the community and does education to folks that are not necessarily LGBT identified. Mostly they're not LGBT identified. And just share our stories and try to dispel some myths that exist about the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community, and hopefully break down some of the stereotypes that still exist today.
What change, you've obviously been involved with the youth groups. Tell me about some of the changes that you've seen and some of the challenges that you think LGBT youth are facing today.
I think that there's two ways to answer that. When I think about the youth that first come into my door, that first come in to their very first LGBT group ever, and they're pretty quiet, pretty shy, and pretty timid, and they don't want to say that they're lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. They don't really know what they are, who they are, and pretty unsure of themselves. And by the time that they leave our groups, for whatever reason, if it's age or because they're moving, a lot of times they're a lot more confident in who they are. They feel more sure of themselves. They feel more comfortable in their own skin. At least that's the anecdotal information I'm getting from them. And so that is always really exciting. Also, it's 2010. Kids, the youth that I work with, they don't seem to feel quite as much inner turmoil around coming out, telling their friends and family that they're lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. But of course, that comes with caveats. It depends a lot on the culture that they come from, the ethnicity, their school environment, and really what a lot of it comes down to is parental and family support. What we found is that youth that have a lot of parental and or family and friend support really do feel more comfortable about who they are, and they don't have the same high incidence of suicide and self-harm that we used to see because they feel more family support. And those, I guess, the anecdotal findings that I have are congruent with some of the studies that Caitlin Ryan has been doing around family acceptance. And right, it definitely depends on a lot of things. But
are you seeing a change in the age in which kids come out? Are you seeing more and more younger kids, middle school age kids coming to Spectrum?
Yes and no. I don't have as many middle school age kids coming, but we do have younger high schoolers coming, freshmen, which didn't used to be the case. And a lot of the kids that I do talk to just don't feel safe coming out in middle school. And I like to think that I'm not that old, so I like to think that I can still remember what it felt like to be in middle school. Sometimes I'm not right, but I remember that was just a really tumultuous time for anybody. So I think that a lot of the youth that I work with talk about, well, I wasn't going to worry about my being gay when I was in middle school. I was just trying to survive those
exactly,
years
exactly,
and get to high school.
I've seen a lot of writing recently in discussions about how kids are coming out younger and younger now, and there is sort of an emerging number of GSA type organizations in middle schools, and an equal struggle with trying to get those groups accepted.
Right.
In middle schools.
And I think that one of the exciting things, besides just coordinating the youth programs at Spectrum, I'm also the Speakers Bureau coordinator. And one of the exciting things that I see happening with our Speakers Bureau program is that we are being invited to speak more and more often at middle schools. And I think that it's exciting to be speaking at the middle school level as well, because I think that LGBT issues still definitely exist at the middle school level, whether it's the youth that are trying to come to terms with their own sexual orientation, or kids that have parents that are lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. And the more that we can start those conversations at younger ages, the more people are going to understand what it's like to be straight or to not be straight, or all of the differences that exist in our world.
So where are the youth groups meeting now?
Well, that's been a new change in Spectrum, at Spectrum as well. We have one youth group that meets on Wednesdays in Novato at the Novato Wellness Center. And we meet the second Wednesday of every month at the Novato Wellness Center. And I spoke earlier about the new space that we're in and being able to collaborate more and more with other organizations. And that's been an exciting change for us, that we can offer youth places to meet that aren't necessarily in San Rafael. We can serve some of the Northern Marin kids easier because we have a group in Novato, and the Novato Wellness Center has been awesome in letting us use their space. Youth Leadership Institute of Marin actually helped us out with giving us a grant to help pay for using the space in Novato. And then we have a group that meets the third Thursday of every month at the Marin Youth Center. And that's right in downtown San Rafael. So that's also a new collaboration that's pretty exciting. And all of that information is available on our website.
Great. And that website is?
www.spectrumlgbtcenter.org.
Great. And if you missed that website, of course, it will be posted on the show notes for Outbeat Youth. And we also have a permanent link on the front page of Outbeat Youth. So you can get to that website anytime. If I'm a brand new gay or lesbian person, let's say I'm a freshman in high school, and I'm venturing out now, and I want to come to my first meeting, what can I expect?
Well, it changes all the time, which is kind of exciting and hard all at the same time, but all of our groups are drop-in groups, so the kids, the different youth that come to group could change on a weekly basis, but you can always expect a warm and welcome environment. We focus a lot on safety, so confidentiality, and making sure that it's a safe space for everyone. We have group agreements that everybody has to agree to at the beginning of each group. And a lot of times you come into a new space and you don't want to necessarily share all of your everything. And so no one is forced to share anything. Kids can just sit back and listen if that's what they need to do to feel comfortable. One of my favorite memories when we were still in San Anselmo was we had this new kid that came to group, and he didn't know anyone, and he was fairly new to the area. And at that point, the kids that were meeting on a weekly basis we had a pretty core group that was meeting, so they were all pretty close friends in group, and they would hang out outside of group too. And then this new kid came in, and he talked to me beforehand, and he said, you know, I'm a little bit scared because they all seem to know each other, and I'm going to be the new kid on the block. And he was pretty quiet throughout the whole group. And then when group got over, the other kids were like, hey, we're going to go get some coffee. Do you want to come with us? And I watched four LGBT kids walk down the street of San Anselmo with their arms linked together. And it was like that they knew that kid always. And it was just a really sweet moment.
So do I need my parents' permission if I'm not 18 years old? Do I have to get a permission slip from my parents to attend a meeting, or can I just come without telling them?
You do not need parental permission if you are 14 to 18. We do have some kids that want to come to group that are not 14 yet, and because of the laws, they do need parental permission.
And so what are the kinds of activities? You have the support groups on Wednesdays in Novato and Thursdays in San Rafael. What are the kinds of activities does Spectrum offer youth?
Well, we are in the process of revamping all of our youth programs. We've been doing the same things for 20-plus years, and those things have worked for a really long time. And what we're finding is that kids aren't wanting everything that they wanted 20 years ago.
Sure.
So we're trying to offer more social opportunities for kids because, as I said earlier, a lot of kids in Marin County seem to have more parental support and aren't having quite as much turmoil around coming out, but they do still have a really hard time finding community.
So I understand Spectrum's a nonprofit organization. Where does all the funding come to put on all these programs and operate buildings?
Well, most of our primary funding source, our primary funding comes from three different sources. We get a lot of funding from MCF, Marin Community Foundation. We get other grants as well.
How can someone then get involved in helping support Spectrum?
Well, there's a variety of different ways. The first place to look would be our website. That's where, if someone does go and look on our website, they can find all of the different programs that we do and all of the different things that are going on in Marin County. They can also find out about donating money if they want to. There's a big button that says donate now. They click on it, they can give us money, and we always appreciate that. We also have different events that go on, fundraising events, and they can find out about all of that on the events page of our website. You know, not everybody always has money to give, and time is just as valuable as money. We're always looking for more lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender folks to join our speakers bureau. Sometimes we need volunteer help around the office. So depending on what someone's skill set is, they could volunteer in other ways as well. We do a lot of work and we're a staff of three. So pretty much if you call, whoever you talk to can give you at least a little bit of information.
We've been talking with Casey Halcrow from Spectrum LGBT Center. Casey, thank you so much for being with us tonight on Outbeat Youth and sharing the latest news from Spectrum. Spectrum's parent support group will meet on the second Tuesday of each month from 6:30 until 8 p.m. at the Spectrum Center in San Rafael. You don't need to be in the closet about your child's sexual orientation or gender identity. Join other parents and caregivers in a safe space to explore the feelings and issues that come with parenting a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or questioning child. This is an ongoing drop-in group and is free of charge. For more information, call Spectrum at area code 415-472-1945. And if you'd like more information about the Spectrum LGBT Center and all of the groups and activities they offer, go to their website at spectrumlgbtcenter.org. You'll always find a link on our own website at outbeatyouth.com. Now, if you're a young person thinking about going away to college, you won't want to miss next month's show. Shane Windmeyer, the executive director of Campus Pride, will be here live in the studio talking about how to select the best and safest LGBT-friendly college or university. Shane has written a number of books on the topic and created the Campus Climate Index. If you have specific questions you'd like to ask Shane, send them to us ahead of time by going to the outbeatyouth.com website and then click on Engage at the top of the page. That's it for this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. Thanks for listening.
And this is Jeff Basham for Outbeat Now. Positive Images invites all queer youth to their cool queer party next Saturday night, March 6th, from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. at the Santa Rosa High School Multipurpose Room. Tickets are $5 and can be purchased at the door. Snacks and refreshments will be served at this alcohol and substance-free event. For more information, go to www.pauseimages.org. Also, in the Outbeat Now Theater Minute, it's the 1930s and the Great Depression is in full swing. But Mae West is born out of the nation's desire for comedy, bawdry, and wit. Dirty Blonde is a multi-layered study of stardom as experienced by one of its avatars, Mae West, and two of her adoring fans. Dirty Blonde continues at Santa Rosa's 6th Street Playhouse on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights, with matinees on Saturdays and Sundays, until March 21st, 2010. More information is available at 707-523-4185 or at 6thstreetplayhouse.com. That's the number 6, T-H, Street, S-T-R-E-E-T, playhouse.com. Yours truly, Jeff Basham, is the stage manager for that production. And we've come to another end of a show here at KRCB, Outbeat Now. Thank you, Greg, for that minute there and for your contributions and everything to this evening's program.
Well, you're very welcome, and good luck with the production downtown. Support for Outbeat Radio and KRCB-FM comes from members and from Advanced Fertility Associates Medical Group,
providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care, serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. They're on the web at afamd.com. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Be sure to tune in next week for Sharon Dye's Living Proof Show right here on Outbeat Radio. You are listening to KRCB-FM Santa Rosa Community Power.